Hi, this is Tessa from Don't Forget the Bubbles. This talk was recorded live at DFTB 18. Enjoy the show.
Okay, I think we have something particularly special to close this afternoon. We're about to welcome Joanne and Scott Beadle, and they are the founding members of Helping Little Hands. And just to tell you a little bit about them, they're the proud parents of three beautiful children who I think are about to show up in a photo above us. Otherwise, we'll just imagine what little Archie, Lewis, and Elba look like. And they're also a different kind of parents in that they're what they've described our kind of parents, in that they have had a child who was born premature. So Lewis, who is still not presented on the photo behind us, we're just going to visualise him. He may or may not have hair, I'm not sure.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to pay for that later, aren't I? Yes, good, good. Is their graduate miracle baby and their surviving twin and their constant motivation. And they've come here today because they want to share with us about how they travelled through their NICU journey and turned a traumatic experience into something that has been positive and uplifting. They run a charity called Helping Little Hands, providing a practical support to families who have a premature child. They hope to inspire us, which I'm very confident they will, to understand how important all of our roles can be in shaping the future where the whole family can be cared for. Please warmly welcome Joanne and Scott Beadle. Cool.
I have one note, and then I'll put my notes away. A little bit nervous. But we are so very happy to be talking to you all today, because we do believe that all of you, in some way, impact on families of premature and sick babies. And as graduate primary parents and co-founders of Helping Little Hands, we really know how significant your impact can be. But we also want to challenge you today. We want you to go back and to think about what is not just possible to make a family's journey a little bit easier, but also what could help achieve the best medical outcomes for your primary patients.
So how do you feel about twins? Our obstetrician laughs again. I put money on those blood results being twins. And she's right, there they are up on the monitor. Two little identical twins. Joanne just starts laughing like a crazy person. I'm just shaking my head, and how the hell did this happen? Now it's 3 a.m. and I'm pacing around the house, trying to figure out where everyone will fit. We'll need a new car. Can you even get a pram for three kids? But telling friends and family is fun. Seeing their faces light up when you say it's twins, little Lewis and Logan. It's probably taken 2 to 3 weeks to get my nerves under control, to really feel how amazing this is. It's not something you can ask for or even hope for. It really feels like an amazing gift.
It's our 19-week scan. I'm starting to feel quite scared. The sonographer, she won't look me in the eye. She's talking about something called twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome. Nobody's ever mentioned this before. I'm now trying to process a 50% chance. That doesn't feel okay.
I can't wrap my mind around the loss of Logan. I can't figure out why I feel this grief for not a child I've not known. I sort of need to figure it out in my head. And I suppose I feel this grief for the loss of the future with him, just as I would for a child I'd known. And for months I've been building up this idea of the future. And now I have to start taking that apart. And when no one's listening, I just repeat out loud to myself, you're not having twins.
This isn't over. We still have Lewis, our surviving baby. But with every day, I worry about losing him too. I worry about the state that he's going to come out in after the damage of the twin-to-twin. All those normal emotions and the joy and the excitement of pregnancy, they've long gone. And I'm grieving the loss of Logan. And not everyone understands that. Pick yourself up and carry on. And every day I feel like a human coffin. I'm still carrying Logan with me with Lewis. But then there's Archie, our two-year-old at home. He knows something's wrong. He picks up on our emotions so instinctively. And yet he's also our medicine. His cheeky smile, baking a cake, happy eating it, building blocks or racing cars down the hall.
Every week is this roller coaster of emotion as we prepare ourselves for the next scan. We try to pretend it'll be fine. Then on the day of each scan, chest just locks with fear. And of course, Logan's still there up on the monitor, but I can't look. He's just floating next to his brother. I just wait to hear Lewis's heartbeat. Then this relief. He's fine for a few days at least.
Our doctor is starting to talk to us about preparing for prematurity. Just keeps going. Last week, she said, you might get to 34 weeks. Today, she's saying, you're probably not going to get past 30. At what point are you going to tell me that he's going to be okay?
Joanne's only 24 weeks. But they've said, oh, you've achieved viability. Such a horrible word to hear. There's always new fears and new information every week, but we don't have any energy left to deal with it. And I suppose you can't prepare yourself for prematurity. We're still on this roller coaster. You just have to keep going because no one's offering us a way off.
I'm 26 weeks now. I know this scare isn't like the other ones. They give me steroids just in case he is coming early. I'm put on bed rest in the hospital. And we play the game. We bring in some clothes and books and things from home. But I suppose we've conditioned ourselves. We're sort of playing a game now because it's just too exhausting to cry all the time. And then all the doctors and other health professionals start to visit us. And the expert says, well, a 28-weeker, they can have pretty good outcomes. Okay. Pretty good considering they're born 3 months early. They're telling us that the risks are low, but it feels like we've been losing at every stage.
Then the chaplain comes with his process for dealing with Logan. He's so kind and empathetic, but we just need to make decisions now. Then the psychiatrist asking Joanne to complete another assessment. Have you been feeling anxious lately, Joanne? I'm just glad I don't have to fill out those tests because I'm lying to everyone. I have to protect Joanne. With all the care and empathy of all these professionals, it really makes a difference to getting us through. Just even simple things. Eye contact, hand here. Just adds up to create a figure that we can sort of believe in you. Maybe someone could bring some control to this madness.
It's Easter Sunday. I've had a few large pains. They give me some morphine to say some rest. It gets to about 9 o'clock at night and Scott tucks me in and he goes home to Archie. And I've dozed off. I wake up about 20 minutes later. And I have this excruciating pain in my back, and in the days I think, oh, do I need the toilet? I reach down and I feel the top of his head. He's coming right now. I hit the panic button and I scream for help. A rush of people through the door. And suddenly my sons are there. They're so intertwined. I can't quite process what I'm seeing. And the doctor rushes in, and my babies are gone.
I feel this relief that he's here. No more scans to check he's okay. I've got no idea about the risk of the NICU, but at least it's not that. I text friends and family. It's such a surreal thing, I need to see it written down even to believe it. I suppose you can't prepare yourself for the NICU either. And as we enter the NICU for the first time, I'm pushing Joanne in the wheelchair. And I'm just grabbing those handles, trying to keep myself up. It's so alien to us. It's rows of cots, it's beeping machines that don't stop. And we approach the incubator, and it's like seeing someone else take that journey. And then it's welcome to the site of a 940-gram 27-weeker.
And there he is, under a wire, mountain of wires and tubes, and this little head, size of a tennis ball, covered in a CPAP hat. There's not an ounce of fat on him, and I'm pretty sure I could thread my wedding ring over his arm. And it does feel more like looking at a science experiment than meeting my son for the first time. That's not really motherly.
Then his nurse, she starts his first cares. She gets a little wet cotton bud, pops in his mouth, pulls out a bit of gunk. Then she swaps that sensor between his feet. Then she puts a hand under his little head, another under his bum. Suddenly she flips him over. I feel a bit sick. I want to go back to the ward. But Joanne, it's 3 a.m. You try and get some sleep. I'll go home and be there for when Archie wakes up. He's a big brother now, but it'll be a long time till he gets to meet little Lewis.
I'm not entirely sure what happened last night. Did I go and meet Lewis first? Did I get to hold Logan? Or did I have to express between any of that? I'm in the room, hotel room, hospital room. I'm on my own. And those feelings of guilt are really overwhelming. I haven't done a particularly good job of looking after these boys so far. And now I'm going home without either of them.
Then we meet Lewis's doctor, Trish. She sits us down and looks us in the eye. I'm not really sure what she's saying at all. But just her tone of voice gives me this comfort that she's in control, is ready to guide us through this. We don't need much from her. She doesn't say it, but she seems to know we're in this shock. We've been through this month of hell, and we just need someone that we can grab onto.
I love my cuddles with Lewis. We're really getting into their NICU life. And that's skin to skin. Getting to hold him, seeing on his monitors his oxygenation levels improve and his DSATs settle for a little while. I feel my own breathing relax, my own muscles sort of do something. I close my eyes and I feel like a real mum for a few minutes until he DSATs and the monitors go crazy again.
I'm back at work and I can only get in for an hour a day. But the nurses helped me learn how to perform Lewis's cares. Makes me feel like a real parent taking this responsibility. We don't need much. We'd maybe just need a couple of minutes a day to tell us how Lewis is doing. Not ignored during the rounds or getting the back of a white coat. Or medical jargon, it's just adding to the confusion.
We're starting to celebrate his many milestones in the NICU. It might be a drop in his CPAP, or his oxygen levels might have come down, or the lovely little notes that the nurse would write in his journal overnight for us. We're dressing him in a mini kilt for his uncle's wedding in Scotland. But then there are the truly awful days. The spikes in his bilirubin that the doctors just can't explain. Chronic lung disease, multiple blood transfusions. The inconsistency. One day I'm allowed to change his SATs probe, and the next day I'm being told off. And then the days when somebody comes by and checks his name band and says, "So where's Twin B?"
People don't seem to understand that there's this need just to be with Lewis. Yesterday my sister said to me, "Well, it's not like he knows you're there." My mum's been fantastic, but she wants me to take it easier on myself. She says, go and play golf with your dad. And they flew in from Scotland right away to help. They're feeding Archie. They're looking after him. The house is almost clean. But people don't understand that time away from Lewis just makes it worse. You fear what you'll find when you see him next. It adds to the guilt in you. The friends that have been fantastic, their help starts to drop away now. They sort of think Lewis is just growing and we've learned to cope. It becomes this roller coaster that you're just on alone.
And we see new families coming in every day. Some are just there for a few days and others are about to start their own long haul journey. And we shuffle around each other for 8, 9, 10 hours a day. Not really made any friends. It was never a club I wanted to be a part of.
There is that one couple that have been here as long as us. We share this sort of half smile, and I always wonder if my face looks as strained as theirs. There's no privacy here in the NICU. We can hear everything being discussed at rounds. This morning there was a mum crying in the corner because she couldn't find a parking space and was late for cares. Then there was a nurse on the phone to some parents who hadn't been in for a week. I think there was no child care, or no money for petrol, or dad was away working, or mum was saving her maternity leave for when Bubs comes home.
I'm so hungry today, but I can't bear the idea of another soggy sandwich in that hospital cafe, surrounded by all the happy families, balloons and flowers for the newly arrived term baby. The days when I'm really struggling, the nurses identify it, and they call Claire, our social worker, to pop by. And when I was first introduced to Claire, I thought, I don't need a social worker. I don't have family problems. It's not my fault that Lewis came early or that Logan didn't make it. But that was before I really understood the power of someone who just cares, who listens, someone to talk to, who understands. Claire's running between so many families. She always had time for us. And it meant the world to me that she had a little chat with Lewis every single day.
Lewis's due date's in 2 weeks, so we started to talk about maybe getting home soon. We've been here so long, it seems like some impossible event. But he's stuck on 26% oxygen, and every time they turn it down, his desats increase. Then this morning, a nurse said to me, oh, well, sometimes babies go home on oxygen. But I don't want that. I want all those wires gone when we go. If I have to take them home, it's like this never ends.
Today's the day. We're getting to take him home. We're going to be a family together for the first time. Archie's never met him. And I have his little outfit already. A blue baby girl with a fox on the front. And a beautiful hand-knitted shawl given to me by one of the nurses up on the ward 13 weeks ago when I was on bed rest. Archie meets him, holds him for the first time, cooing. We get in the car, we go home. Everything is safe and calm and good.
Is it baby Lewis?
Mommy's hands do need to be clean. It's just a baby, okay? It's just a baby.
Teeny tiny.
Want him back? Okay. Mommy will help, though. No, Mommy will help. He's just a baby.
A baby. Baby. A baby. Bubbles.
Is it your little brother, Archie?
Bubbles.
Baby brother.
Ooh. This is what all the fuss has been about.
Baby Lewis.
Baby eyes.
It's got baby eyes.
Lewis has been home for almost 6 months now, and his personality has really started to show. Everyone loves his infectious laugh, and he thinks everything Archie does is absolutely amazing. It's Christmas, so Joanne makes a big batch of shortbread to take down to the parents' lounge at King Eddie's. It feels right doing this, and seems to bring a shape to something both of us have been thinking.
We sit down one day with our friends, Kate and Adam, that couple we had a half smile with back in the NICU, and we map out our charity, Helping Little Hands. It's pretty easy. We had similar journeys, and we know that the difficulties and the challenges faced by families with premature babies, they're quite similar. We know we need to create a practical support network to help and support and guide families through the toughest roller coaster of their life.
We need a meals program so they can have 2 to 3 nights off a week but still put food on the table at home.
We need fruit and snacks in the parents' lounge so that if they miss breakfast or they can't afford lunch, they get some nutrition.
And we need well-being events so they can de-stress and access self-care.
And childcare, better on-site childcare. Stop that guilt between dividing yourself between your baby and the siblings.
And the facilities. We need a shower so Dad can come straight from work. We need somewhere for Mum to rest her head between cares. We just need to advocate for the simple idea that the best way to look after a preemie is to look after the whole family.
And as at the same time we were thinking of Helping Little Hands, King Eddie's, our hospital in Perth, we're implementing a program called Family Integrated Care, and it sees parents as partners with staff in the care of their babies. Now everything Helping Little Hands does holds Phi Care really at its heart, because we can see the impact of Phi Care for the families and the babies, but we also know how challenging it is to play that vital role as a parent.
We've experienced the willingness of the local community to get involved, even people without any experience of the preemie world. We talked to the owner of a local catering business, and she commits to providing dinners for our families. In the last year, she provided 1,700 meals that have helped us feed 70 families. And then we speak to our friend who, by a lot of luck, owns Perth's largest physio business. And right away, he commits to providing free massage at our monthly well-being events.
We've partnered with people like Food Bank and Food Rescue, and they now underpin our drops into the parent lounges. And we're also starting to see the families that we've helped come back to Helping Little Hands and see how they can get involved. They're bringing with them a passion and a dedication that reminds us every single day just how important these services are.
Of course, the challenges. Getting access to decision makers in the hospital is very difficult. Often the starting point's no, and then you have to spend a lot of time and effort to show there might be another way. But this is about a hospital culture that recognizes the importance of parents and recognizes the opportunity cost of not involving them. And of course, any call for change hits that brick wall of the NICU budget, which I'm sure you know all about. But this is about more than spending decisions. It's starting in that basic human level of how you speak and how you engage with people. But it also means looking wider, looking at things that inhibit parents from being involved, hospital policies or facilities or services.
But the impact of this is more than the numbers or the description of the services can really explain. It's the huge psychological impact for families when they see staff, graduate parents, and the local community rally around them to help them through.
So approaching 3 years into our NICU journey, we've learned a lot about the challenges many families faced, and we're constantly amazed at the medical benefits that can be provided when you involve families in the care of the premies. But we've also seen how challenging it is to actually perform that role. Basic everyday things, food, childcare, fuel for the car. For the less fortunate, domestic violence, addiction, depression. But unless we really try to enable all parents, we won't achieve the medical outcomes that are truly possible.
Lewis, he's absolutely our little prince. But helping little hands is not Joanne and Scott's little kingdom. We really believe it's a model that can be replicated across NICUs and hospital wards across Australia. Regardless if family integrated care has been adopted in your hospital or not, think about how far down the line you are as a hospital and an individual of supporting families, enabling them to spend time with their children. If you're a doctor, a nurse, lactation consultant, or part of hospital management, it really doesn't matter. You all have a huge impact to play. It can start small and have the hugest impact.
And in our experiences, we truly believe that that next leap forward, which I think Greg said wasn't possible, that can genuinely come when we try this new thing and we engage parents. And the hospital says, let's look after the whole family, not just the baby. Thank you.
I think so.
Here they come.
Yay.
Hey, buddy. Want to do a wave? What's that? Want to do a wave? Do a wave. Beautiful. No way. Oh. You've got a crocodile tattoo. Temporary. Crocodile tattoo.
Wow. I know that you were both really anxious about speaking today and that you wanted to make an impact. You have. Yeah. There are a couple of questions. Do you feel like you're up for answering a couple of questions? I'm sure you're feeling quite emotional just to be finished. Ian, do you have a question?
Look, you stunned this audience. I don't think that that's a surprise to anybody that's sitting here. A lot of the comments that came through is about the power of the story that you told. Many of them were also about the sense of privilege that the people in this room felt about listening to you, so thank you very much.
And it might seem unusual to you because everyone here works in pediatrics in some way, shape or form, and we hear your stories actually over and over and over again every day, but there's a way that I think we all distance ourselves in order to kind of survive. And then when we hear people like you here and then meet people, meet little Lewis, it's completely different. Is that a surprise to you?
In some ways, I think it is. And in others, not. I think there's a recurring theme coming through the talks that it's almost taking yourself back to remember whatever it might be, a gesture, a word, I suppose being present.
Yeah.
And remembering the impact of whatever it might be, what you say, what you do, and just being aware of that in the busyness of everything.
Can I ask another question? I guess we do see a lot of parents who've had a twin who has died in utero or not long after in the NICU, and then we get to see them in the pediatric system. I know it's very individual, but for you, would you like us to constantly acknowledge Logan? I always do to our bereaved parents, and sometimes I can see that people kind of wish that I hadn't. But we know it's the number one most difficult question for bereaved parents is how many children do you have?
Yeah.
Because if you say two, then you're denying that Logan ever existed. If you say three, you might have to share your story with someone that's so deeply personal that you may prefer not to. As health professionals, what would you prefer us to do, do you think?
I think that acknowledgement,
yeah,
from my side as the mum is really important.
Yeah.
It's part of Lewis's story as well. He is a twin.
Yes.
And there are impacts for him and our family forevermore of him being a twin. And as hard and as sad as that can be at times, we'll have to share this with him as he's older.
Mm.
And to not have that in our acknowledged.
Children and animals. You never work them.
So, yeah, I would say it's really very important to acknowledge them.
Yeah.
And
are there any other questions from the audience? I think this is a lovely opportunity, but you've done such an amazing job and such a comprehensive job, I guess, of reminding us what brought us to the hospital, and that was not to there's a light. Let's hope there's no planes flying above.
I'll just watch on this.
But I guess what brought us to this work was not machines, and it wasn't hospital systems, it wasn't reliability, it was children and families. And if we can keep that in our focus at all times, then hopefully we'll make terrible experiences such as the one you've had a lot easier to cope with. We've had such a fantastic panel. Can you please help me in warmly thanking everybody, but particularly Scott and Joanne and little Lewis and also baby Logan. Oh, and here's Archie. Cut it. Yeah. I think Scott's saying to me, and look, they have lots of hair.